Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and earned a bachelor's degree in business administration from Wayne State University. In 1978, after a short stint as a Hollywood actor, he joined the Detroit Pistons as sales director. From 89 to 2010, he was the president and CEO of Palace Sports and Entertainment. And since 2010, he's been the president and CEO of Olympia Entertainment. A key part of the $700 million Detroit Event Center, his name, Tom Wilson. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to the iconic, legendary Tom Wilson, who we had on 10 years ago.
Is that right? Is it 10 years?
10 years. You haven't changed. You haven't aged a day.
I was going to say the same thing about you, and we're both wrong.
All right. What if we start by talking about your childhood and your mom, who you owe so much to?
Well, I was in an interesting situation, not unlike a lot of other people. I grew up in Detroit, 6 Mile and Woodward area, and my dad left when I was about a year old. So it was really my mom and I together, and like that for a long, long time. But in those days, it was very difficult to be a single mother, and then you have to make sure that you're the one working and you're the one who's providing for what a little family we had. But we always had a housekeeper that had to stay with us because she was gone at nights and she was gone during the days and everything like that. But we got through it. What it taught me was a work ethic, because I had to start work when I was 15 and I was in high school at Cass Tech right here, not too far away from our studios. And so you go to work. You work pretty much full time through high school, all the way through college. Did some night school because I was just, again, down the street here at Wayne. You figure out how to help out at the house and everything like that, and work hours, and you miss the high school experience and you kind of miss the college experience, but I think you probably grow in other ways as well, and maybe you mature a little bit faster that way. So no regrets. It just is the hand you're dealt, and you got to play it, right?
Then, Tom, you hitch your wagon, you go out west to Hollywood. You're going to be an actor, and you got a small part in a television show, and somehow that led to a career with the NBA.
Yeah, interesting story, because I'm always talking to young people, and of course, sports, everybody's mesmerized by that. How do I get into it and everything like that? And in those days, your uncle worked in it, or you knew somebody, or a friend of a friend, or something like that, or a guy down the street was in the business. So you never really took it seriously as a career possibility. And so I did move out right after I graduated from college. The next day, I got in the car, drove to California, decided I wanted to be an actor, and I had a part on an old show called Barnaby Jones, which was starred a guy named Buddy Ebsen, who was Jed Clampett in the Beverly Hillbillies. And it was a detective series, and I was a part of a team that was fixing games, or the star player was fixing games for the mob. And so we shot that at the Forum, where the Lakers played, with some of the Laker players and some of the front office people. And I got to know them, and they had me come out to some games. And over a period of a month or two, they finally said, hey, why don't you think about coming to work for us in the sales department? And I thought, well, you know, acting's not working out all that well. And you know what? I've always loved sports. So the opportunity to actually work for the Lakers and the LA Kings was, the legendary franchise and everything like that. Jerry West was still playing for them, and it was like a dream come true. So that's how I got in the business, and I stayed there for a couple of years. And then after our first daughter was born, we moved back to Michigan to be with the family. And a few months later, I hooked on with the Pistons and had a pretty glorious 32-year run with them.
And you meet a man that changed your life, the late great Bill Davidson.
Well, Bill was he was a lot to me. You know, growing up without a father, as we said before, you know, he was sort of the strongest sort of male relationship that I'd had. And it doesn't start that way, of course. You're an employee. And he was a wonderful man in the sense that he saw in you, and that's it's a skill that very few people have, but he saw what you could be rather than what you were. Not many folks can do that. And sometimes you're wrong in what you appear to be. That's all you're ever going to be. But I think he was willing to take chances with particularly young people. And he saw in them the future of a corporation as he ran Guardian Industries incredibly successfully. But over time, you know, when you earn the trust, and it takes a few years, then he gives you tremendous, or gave you tremendous I guess, rope, if you will. But you had a lot of liberties to sort of run an organization as you felt it needed to be run. I talked to him every day for probably 30 years and just kept him abreast. But he was the sort of guy who said, you know, I've got my hands full with my building, with my company, and I don't really know anything about the sports business, you know, business. I don't know anything about the arena business. So that's why you're here. So you run it and just keep me posted on everything. And slowly but surely, I'll learn a little bit of it. But we'll have a great run together, and that's exactly what happened. He was as close to a father as I've ever had, and we vacationed together from time to time and had a spectacular relationship.
Speaking of him telling you, I don't know anything about the sports business, how, Tom Wilson, did you ever go from being sales director to president and CEO of Palace Sports and Entertainment?
Well, part of that was that journey. You know, when we started, Jack, you know, I was the sixth guy working for the Pistons. That's all there were. There were six of us. And, you know, somebody, you know, called in sick. I was the fifth guy, you know, so you'd move up the ladder. But they were looking to expand because it was the last year we were playing at Cobo Arena. And they were moving out to the Silverdome. And that means you're going to a football stadium. And the Pistons had a horrible history of drawing 2,000 or 3,000 people. But now we had to professionalize and move out to the Silverdome. So we, you know, doubled or tripled the staff, still very, very small by today's standards. And after a year, you know, Bill came to me maybe I'd prove something, but he said, I want you to take it over. I was like maybe 29 at the time or something like that. So I did tell him it was a mistake. I didn't tell him then. I told him a few years later when we started having some success that I'm not sure I would have done that. But we were so bad, you couldn't be wrong. You literally couldn't be wrong. There were a bunch of young guys that we brought in from school, some of whom still work with me 37 years later or something like that. We've been together that long. But we just sort of said at the time, we're playing in a football stadium with 3,000 people. Forget about the rules. You know, there's rules. You can't comp tickets. You can't discount tickets. You know, ticket integrity and all that sort of things. We had 3,000 people there. Let's take some chances. Let's write our own rules. And so we started doing things differently from a marketing standpoint than anybody had done before. And suddenly we're doing crowds of 16 and 18 and 20,000 and 25,000 for a sport that if you did 10, it was a heck of a night. And we started doing amazing things because our feeling was we want people sitting home reading newspapers back when they read newspapers saying, gosh, the Pistons had 22,000 last night. What's going on out there? And creating a curiosity and a buzz and a demand that had never, ever been there. And so that's how we ended up sort of running it. I was the best of a bad lot, maybe.
We're talking to Tom Wilson. I've never heard him describe himself that way. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Tom Wilson, who from 1989 through 2010 was president and CEO of Palace Sports and Entertainment. Speaking of which, the Palace opened in 88. It was ahead of its time. Some say it's still ahead of its time, and you were cooking with the bad boys. Talk about the bad boys.
That was a remarkable time, and part of it was because the team had been so bad for so long. And the beauty of the Bad Boy Championships in 89 and 90 is that we had created this fan base, and people rode along with us. Fans who became fans in 83 or 84 or 85 watched this steady path up to what eventually became a championship. But you got better and better and better, and so everybody kind of did it together. The team did it together with tweaks every year, but the fans kept coming along. They kept coming back and just hoping this is the year, and never really believing, I don't think, that it was going to happen. This was sort of the glory years of basketball. You had the Celtics with five or four Hall of Famers, the Lakers with four Hall of Famers, and us. you know, kind of, you know, trying to squeeze into that fraternity, and it never looked like it would ever happen, not against teams like that. And so when it finally did, it was sort of the culmination of everybody's wish, and I think everybody from the players to the front office were crying the day that it won because the impossible had happened. So it was a great run with amazing personalities from Chuck Daly to Isaiah Thomas to John Sally to Joe Dumars, a completely sort of amazing mix. It was competitive. It was tough. On the other hand, full of love, a locker room full of love for each other and respect for each other. But boy, they had battles internally and externally. And somehow Chuck, as sort of the master chef, brought it all together and made it all work. But it was an amazing run.
Speaking of the impossible happening, no owner of a major franchise had ever held concurrently two World Championship trophies. In 2004, Mr. Davidson and you got the championship for the Pistons, the Detroit Shock, the Tampa Bay Lightning. What was that like?
That was surreal. We also won the Arena Football Championship. Nobody ever counts that, but
did you get a World Championship trophy?
I got a ring. So to me, it counts. But it was amazing. We had just bought the Tampa Bay Lightning. They were the worst team in the league the year before we bought them. Worst team in sports, Sports Illustrated said. And 5 years later, we were fortunate enough to win the Stanley Cup. But that goes back to what we were talking about, Bill, before, where he gave you latitude. So he said, here, when we decided to buy the team, he said, okay, just go set it up. So I had to hire the coach and the general manager and everything like that. We got in the WNBA. He says, okay, go ahead and hire the coaches. And Bill Lambeer was willing to come in. So we hired Bill and then and Joe Dumars. Probably hired him maybe a year or two before he was ready. But again, that goes back to Bill sort of seeing things in people before they see things in people. And so all of them kind of came together at one time. And it was so interesting. I remember talking to the Sports Illustrated people when we won the Stanley Cup in Tampa. And he said, yeah, I'll probably see you in Detroit. You guys are playing for the basketball championship too, right? So we're at Center Ice. And 8 days later, we're at Center Court getting trophies. And it was the pinnacle, I suppose. If you're looking for, you know, what are you proudest of in terms of a sports accomplishment, that was the pinnacle of pinnacles, I suppose. And so it can't get any better than that. It'll never be duplicated because nobody's crazy enough to own four sports teams anymore, much less, two.
You've got this fabulous career. And then early in 2010, Mr. Davidson had passed, and you trade hoops for hockey sticks and baseball bats. You're too pretty. That face is not a face of hockey sticks. Why did you do it?
You know, it was an interesting time. You know, Bill Davidson had always said, you know, this is going to be yours when I pass, and not mine in the sense that here you can have it or anything like that, but you'll run it, and then when you get tired, put the keys on the desk and call it a career, and you know, then my kids can take over and everything like that. And then by the time he passed, things had changed and plans had changed, and his widow announced she was going to sell the team. And so when that happened, Chris Illich actually called and he said, things change when you bring in new owners, and usually they change at the top of an organization because they want their own people in, which makes a ton of sense. And so maybe you'll end up staying there, and maybe you'll go someplace else. But before I open up the newspaper and find out that you've gone to Denver, shouldn't we at least talk about doing some things down here? So I thought, well, that actually makes some sense. So we sat down, and it took months and months and months of conversation because the idea of actually leaving Palace Sports, leaving the Pistons, where I'd been for 30 years, was sort of anathema to me. It just was not something that was ever on my radar. But the more you talked, I remember his sort of clinching story. He said, you've had a lot of good fortune and success in your career, but how would it feel if someday you could take your grandkids and walk them down Woodward Avenue in a brand new city and say, I had something to do with this? And it was a pretty interesting story, and it was something that you had to think about because the city had been given up by so many people for dead. And I think that's what makes what's happening now so exciting, because nobody saw this thing coming. Nobody saw this sort of renaissance taking place in the city of Detroit. So Chris was exactly right, and it makes me so grateful that we sort of took on this challenge. And when people see this building and they see what's happening in downtown Detroit and they really get their arms around it and see how this is all going to be the epicenter of sports and entertainment and everything in Detroit, it's going to be a life changer, a game changer. It's going to be something we can be proud of across the country and throughout the world.
We're talking to Tom Wilson. In his younger days out in Hollywood, twice he was on The Dating Game. And a man with a voice like this and his schmoozing, there must have been two foolish young girls who did not choose this man as the winner. You worked for an iconic patriarch, Mr. Davidson. Now, Mr. I. Tell us about Mr. Ilitch.
Well, I think people always say, what's similar about them? What's the difference in the two? And I'm always drawn to the fact that they're both extremely kind people, first and foremost, and really, really genuinely care about the fans, the fans, the fans. And a lot of owners, in Ownership 101, they always tell you, well, you got to thank the fans, you got to thank the fans. And some actually believe it. And I think in Bill Davidson and Mike Ilitch, they're people that really, really want to win championships for this city and for that fan base that's so loyal to them. And on top of being nice, I mean, they're just fiercely competitive, fiercely competitive. I mean, Bill Davidson in business, in life, in sports, and I think the same with Mr. I, they just want to win. And part of it's for yourself, but a big part, as I say, is for the fans. And so that's the similarity. But all around the Fox Theater where we work, or Joe Louis, you'll see quotes from Mr. I about intensity and about passion and about kindness. And they're not contradictory. They're complementary, I think, in terms of the character that both those men have.
Speaking about having a passion to win, Hockey Town, the Detroit Red Wings, the run has been unparalleled. Tell us about the man behind the scenes, Kenny Holland.
Well, you know, it's people always say, what's the key? And of course, it's ownership and so on, and it starts right there. But it's a culture. It's a culture, really, in any winning organization where mediocrity is just not accepted. I mean, there's this never-ending quest to be great. And if you're not great this year, you better be on the way to being great, you know, next year or the year after. But putting the things in place, and should we make the playoffs this year, that'll be 25 years in a row, which is far and away the longest streak in professional sports right now. The next closest is about 16 or 17. I think the Spurs in San Antonio have a great run, and they're going to make it again this year. So another terrific organization. But Kenny's sort of the conscience of everything. I mean, he's as nice a man as I've ever worked with in this business. Also, while he doesn't bleed that competition, you just know it's there. And he never is the one to go out and grab credit. I mean, ever. And he's the first one to say, you know, the credit goes to the players, the credit goes to the coaches. Mike Babcock did a great job. Jeff Blashill is going to be a great coach. But you never see Kenny Holland talk about Kenny Holland. But the players love playing for him. He sells, and I say sells, I mean, he sort of embodies everything that the Wings are in terms of tradition, in terms of passion, in terms of commitment and everything. And so he sets the standard and looks for a particular type of player in terms of his personality and in terms of his character so that you keep this tradition going and this commitment to excellence.
We're talking to Tom Wilson. When we come back, we'll ask him about this magical transformation that we're watching unfold in downtown Detroit. And I'm Jack Brasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Brasula, and we're with Tom Wilson, who since 2010 has been the president and CEO of Olympia Entertainment. If you want to learn more, www.olympiaentertainment.com. Tom, let's go back to 2010. Soon after you took the job, I came down to see at the Fox one morning, 10 o'clock or so, and we're looking out the window at Woodward Avenue, and it's empty. Dick Cheney could hunt there for a week and not hurt anybody. There was nobody, and you said, Jack, there's nobody down here.
Yeah.
Now, less than 6 years later, the transformation's unbelievable. How did it happen?
You know, it's impossible. I mean, I do think people will be writing term papers 5 years from now on the resurrection of the city of Detroit, because we tell the story in our preview center, and you've been down to see it, where we have we actually have the district laid out, because we're committed to doing 50 blocks of sort of development and renovation right in the center of the city. And you tell the story about how you can't find a place to live in downtown. You can't find a place to live in Midtown. And this story is coming in. And you've had 80 restaurants open in the last 3 years in downtown Detroit. That's one every other week. And now, while we always talked about, well, it's the millennials coming back. It's unbelievable. All these kids are coming down by the thousands to live here and come down every weekend. What you're seeing now are all these 40 and 50 and 60-year-old suburban people who said, I wouldn't go down there if you paid me, coming down every weekend to try to get into restaurants down there, and usually or often fail or wait for an hour or 2 hours. It's unbelievable. And you tell this story, and then you say, and 13 months ago, we were bankrupt. We were a city that was bankrupt. It's impossible. And the thing I sort of attribute it to, there's a lot of people that you have to credit, but I think as you look back over 20, 30, 40 years ago, there's always been one person who's tried to make a difference in the city, whether it was Henry Ford II with the Rensen, or Max Fisher building the riverfront apartments, or the Ilitches even with Comerica Park, or the Fords with Ford Field. And it's always kind of, come on, I'm going to lead this charge, and come on with me, and we're going to make a difference. And you look behind you, and there's nobody there. And I think the difference now is that you've got Danny Gilbert doing amazing things in downtown. You've got General Motors doing amazing things downtown. You've got Sue Mosey and everybody in Midtown doing great things. You just have Redico taking over the building we're in here at the Fisher Theater, and they're going to bring this thing back to its glory. And you've got Wayne State expanding every place in the medical center. And so it's not one person anymore saying, come on. It's five or six people. And with one person, it's hard to get things started. With six people, it's hard to stop it. And that's what we're seeing is there's so much momentum, and it's coming from so many different directions that if I'm an individual entrepreneur who's always dreamed of opening up a restaurant, you know, I feel like it can work now, because when this building is built in our sort of 50-block area, we'll have 1,000 events every year. That means there's going to be feet on the ground for one show or three shows or five shows every single night. So now I've got a critical mass. My business can really, really work. And so it's coming from every direction, Jack. And that's what's so gratifying, and that's what's so surprising, because I think a lot of us just never thought we'd ever see this day, and now it's coming on us so fast that we almost can't believe it.
The name of the show is Anything Is Possible, and none of us ever thought we'd see the day where there'd be a home for sale downtown for $4 million plus. We won't go there. Tell us about Mayor Mike Duggan.
Well, I think we talk about the six or seven different people that are sort of leading the charge. I've referred to it before as sort of a perfect storm of good things happening. And part of it is all those people coming in. Part of it is Danny Gilbert and what he's done to sort of supercharge this this expansion and this acceleration of everything that's going on. But Mike Duggan sits sort of at the head of everything. And Mike is first of all, I like him very much, and I respect him very much. He is a tough, tough guy in a tough job. And if you were anybody else or any other kind of personality, you couldn't do the kinds of things that he's doing. You couldn't get done what he's getting done. And you wouldn't create an atmosphere that surrounds this city right now that says, come on in, we're going to make your business successful. And he figures out ways to help you. Always thinking about his constituencies, though. I mean, when there's an ask, it's an ask to help out, you know, this group or that group or this group, and it's the right thing, and it's the right ask. So working with him has been a pleasure, and part of it is because he's working with 10 or 12 or 20 other people and making them do the same thing, but leading them to success in the city and successfully launching whatever project it is they have to go in. And he's created this patina around the city, I think, of a feeling that I can be successful. My business can be successful. And so now if I owned a business and I had 50 or 100 or 200 particularly young employees, I would look to move them downtown, because the energy and the excitement down here is just going to escalate by the day, almost by the day.
The Detroit Events Center, $700 million plus project. Tell us about the new center.
Well, it's going to be an extraordinary building, and I say that without any hyperbole at all. I mean, it was going to be a very nice building when we began, and one of the great things about the Illiches is they keep saying, okay, what else can we do? How can we make this better? And sometimes it's a $100,000 tweak, and sometimes it's a $3 or $4 million tweak, because it's going to impact the building, it's going to impact the fans, and I use that word with Mr. I, but that's one of the things the Illiches talk about is fans, and how do we make the experience the best. And, you know, we're playing in an old, tired building that's got a lot of miles on it. And that's a disadvantage. But the advantage is you can go out and see every other arena in the country, and you can pick up the best features from every building, which is what we've done, merged it in with some of the things that we thought would be terrific ideas, and you put them all in one place. So for that moment, when we open this building, it's going to be the best of the best of the best arenas in the entire United States. And so on that day, Detroit, Michigan, downtown Detroit, Michigan, will have the finest arena in the country, reimagined as we did at the Palace, 28 years ago. That broke the mold and set a standard for arenas. And every building that's been built since has been some version or other of the Palace. And I think our mission this time was to say, okay, that's been great for 25 years. Now, how do we reimagine the arena experience? And I hope we have done that. And I think when people come down, they're going to be amazed.
You want to learn more at www.districtdetroit.com. You're going to have the actual arena sunken in 40 feet, but then you're going to have buildings around it. And you're going to have this huge atrium covered with glass. Talk about that, Tom.
Well, you know, when we started, Jack, we had designed a building very much like the United Center in Chicago. And by that, I mean, it's a huge sort of monolithic structure that was 15, 16 stories tall. And it was going to be great. I mean, it was really a beautiful, beautiful building. And then the Illiches said, you know, we can do more than be an arena. We can do more. And they looked at this expansive property that surrounded it and the opportunity that was there to make a real difference in the city. The whole property is going to be the connective tissue between the amazing things that Danny's doing downtown, Danny Gilbert, and the amazing things happening in Midtown. You had this 50-block parcel. And so I think then they just sort of said, if we want to do more, we need to develop neighborhoods where people feel comfortable walking around, where you can build residential and commercial and retail. And if we're going to do that, the anchor can't be an 18-story building, because whatever I build next to that seems kind of insignificant. So we tore up the plans and went back to the drawing board. And that's when the decision was made. Let's put everything 40 feet in the ground. That brings the building down to a maximum height of just over 100 feet. And then we did, as you suggest, we put buildings outside of it. So we took everything out of the building that you didn't need, sort of like the offices that are usually in the basement. We took out the merch store. We took out the restaurant. We took out the box office. And we put them in these outbuildings that surround the arena. And they're only 4 stories tall. So if I want to build next to the arena now, I'm building next to a 4-story building. So scalability, comfort, and all of that neighborhood feel is going to be there. And the architecture of those outbuildings is going to be terrific and going to feel like they've been there for 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, it's a really clever approach. And then when you go inside the arena, it's a different feel, because to connect those buildings to the arena is a glass atrium. So you've got a 100-foot-wide concourse, 3 times the size of Joe Louis or the Palace. And so when you're in the concourse, instead of looking up at beams and trusses, you're looking up at a blue sky or stars or snow or something like that. You're inside, but you feel like you're outside, and it's going to change along with the 5 or 6 restaurants that we have instead of one, and a huge merchandise store instead of a little tiny one. It's going to change your whole experience coming downtown.
www.districtdetroit.com. We're with Tom Wilson, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. And we're talking to the president and CEO of Olympia Entertainment, Tom Wilson. Tom, talk to us about the luxury suites.
Well, that's been interesting. You know, we talked a few minutes ago about how we tried to get the best ideas from around the country, and we didn't take a look at a lot of the suites, and we came back and we had some interesting discussions, because you can make suites a certain size and get, let's say, 80 of them in the space that we put 50 in, we decided that sweets are a business tool, more so than a nice to have or anything like that. They're a business tool. And so they're really designed. They're elegant. They're extraordinary. They're the nicest sweets we've seen anywhere in the country. And they were sold out in 40 days. We thought maybe 6 months. And what was interesting was so many people told us, particularly in the auto industry, auto suppliers, that, you know, we can't have 2009 happen to us again. You know, we really, maybe 3-year lease or 4-year lease. In fact, we'll pay you even more if we can go year to year, just so we don't get in trouble. And the first 25 people that came in all bought. They all bought for 10 years, even the people who said we can't go beyond that, because I think they looked at it and they said, my gosh, we can drive our business. And sometimes when the economy changes, we look at cut, as opposed to grow. There's opportunities there. And I remember you talked about Bill Davidson. I remember when the economy was crashing and he worked really hard. He was in a wheelchair and he wanted to make his last international staff meeting. And he got up in front of people and he said, you know, for years we've been saving a lot of money, a lot of cash to prepare for moments like this. Take advantage of this time. Next year when I'm sitting here, I want to look out here and see you sitting next to somebody you've recruited from this industry that wasn't in as good a shape as us. This is an opportunity for us to grow our business, to be even greater than we are today. And I think sometimes we start eliminating things that make us great in an effort to sort of survive, when in reality, it's an opportunity to do even better. And so I think people really gravitated to the sweets. And as I say, they went out in 40 days, and then we sold the kind of mini suites, the Loge boxes. There were 26 of those, and they're all gone. And then the Legends Club, which is something we have at Joe Louis, but this is a little nicer, and they're all gone. And so the response from the public has been great. But what's interesting, when I tell you that the suites all sold out, so many people came in with roots in Detroit who sort of went through the district presentation, the same one that you went through, heard the story, the real story of what's going on down here and what's happening and where we're going as a city. And all of them kind of wanted to be part of that. So I think a lot of what's happening in Detroit and what is about to happen really played into their decision to bet heavily. And I say bet, it's a pretty calculated bet. I think it's going to pay off in spades for everybody. But the suites are great, and we can't thank people that have joined us in them enough.
Talk to us about a skin on the outside of the arena bowl.
It goes back to that architecture that we had talked about before, which is it's 100 feet away from the arena, and you're walking past buildings that look like one could look like a loft apartment, the next one could be limestone, and the next one could be something that looks like it came from the warehouse district, and you're going like, well, where is the arena? And then you finally come to this glass entrance, and there's four of them around the arena. And as you walk in, it almost looks as if a spaceship has landed. I mean, it's Oz. You know, you're making this walk through the neighborhood, and then you're in Oz. And it's this aluminum-coated orb, if you will, that you come in and you see, and it's 100 feet away from the entrance. So it takes your breath away, because this aluminum-colored orb changes colors. It can be every 30 seconds, every 6 minutes, every hour. It can be blue, it can be red, it can be something else. Or you can project on this orb in enormous size and scope the game itself, the concert that's taking place in the arena at the same time. But you can't take your eyes off of it, because a simple image is like 40 feet by 60 feet. It's the biggest thing you've ever seen in an arena. So it's great for not only the fans, but even as a sponsor. You could literally have your, if you were Coca-Cola, you could have those polar bears sort of walk all the way around the arena and kind of watch this. And again, you're riveted by it.
Speaking of the concert that you're watching, this will open in September of 2017. Who will be the opening act, the first concert?
That's anybody's guess. We have some thoughts, but we can't start booking yet. You know, it's interesting. When we opened the Palace, we had a September 1 date also, and that's when we're going to open. So we booked Bill Cosby. I hesitate to say he was going to be our grand opening act. But then they kept coming to us. People would say, well, you know, I can get we can get Pink Floyd in if you can open 5 days earlier. Okay, so we go back to the contractor, say, well, can we get 5 days earlier? And so we move back again. weekend? Well, I can get George Michael at the time, if you can move back another 2 days. So we kept moving and moving and moving. We ended up actually moving back like 18 days until Sting was the grand opening act. I don't think we'll see the same thing again, because I think this project is so big, we'll be working right up until deadline. But when we open, very much like the Palace, we opened with 28 shows, I think, in the first 30 days. I think you're going to see the same thing here. You're going to see this become the hottest venue in the entire country. I think people are going to be flocking to Detroit, partially because of the arena, partially because what a great story this renaissance in this city is. I mean, when people give you up for dead, there's nothing this country likes more than sort of that story of the Phoenix rising, and that's what this entire city is.
Just keep in the back of your mind, if you see fit, I am available in September of
2017. That's so good to know. And I will keep that way in the back of my mind.
This district, $1.2 million, five-star hotel, 80-plus restaurants, two apartment buildings. Talk a little bit about the district.
Well, I think that's what's going to be such an amazing surprise. I think one of the things that happens when you go to 50 blocks, you start thinking about, well, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, and you sort of take your eye off the prize. And so I think we had to sort of reel ourselves back in and say, wait a minute. It all starts with the arena. The arena's got to be great, and it's got to set a standard for everything that follows. And so we got our focus back on that. And then you start working on the perimeter things. And, you know, Mr. Ilitch stepped up and gave $40 million to Wayne State to build a new business school, which will be adjacent to the arena. What was amazing is, as you tell this story, as we've been talking about for the last hour, we put out for, if you want to say bids or interest levels, a five-star hotel in downtown Detroit, Michigan. Now, where's that bid going 5 years ago? You know, probably nowhere. And we had seven different companies that all expressed sincere interest in being the developer on that project. And we're down to a couple now, so we'll probably be making that announcement in the next 30 or 60 days. But it'll be a five-star hotel that'll be also adjacent to this property. I just got back from Edmonton last Monday, and it's such a similar story. There's not been new construction in Edmonton for 50 years in downtown Edmonton. And now you're watching this arena go up, and it's given people the courage to build another three or four towers of residential and commercial property that's going up at the same time. And literally, as you look around downtown Edmonton, you go, oh my gosh, they have reimagined this entire city. And I think this arena is going to be the kicking off sort of event for exactly the same thing here in downtown Detroit. You won't recognize Detroit 5 years from now.
Quickly, between Comerica and the Fox, today we have that parking lot. What's going to go up there in the next year?
Well, we start in the spring, this coming spring, couple months. We'll be building another parking garage to take the place of those two lots, and there will be residential properties that will go up there. We're building apartments there. We're building apartments adjacent to the arena because you can't get enough apartment space down there. And so Danny's building another 300 units as well, and so it's coming from every place, and we're going to be pleasantly overrun with people very, very soon.
You talked a few segments ago that this is a whole bunch of people this time that is doing this transformation. You didn't mention yourself, but you're a key part.
Well,
thank you. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohn.